know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast, What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
But Danny, we've got to start with the Washington Capitals. I was in the barn last night at Capital One Arena, and I took that very familiar walk on the plank.
Yeah.
Out of Cap One. I was saying to the fellas earlier, Darius and Ryan and CK, as we were kind of hanging out in the studio a little bit ago, I can't tell you how many times I've done that. Last night, sitting there heartbroken after a playoff loss to eliminate you at home. You don't want to get up. You don't want to move. You just kind of want to soak up those last few minutes at Cap One in the cold, iced air. And knowing you're not coming back till October. But that was the story last night. The Capitals, only the Capitals can do this. They scored two goals, probably outplayed their opponent, and lost a playoff game 2-1. That's hard to do. But correctly, the Connor McMichael offsides negated a very rare Matthew Roy goal. So Matty Roy's goal came back. And they lose 2-1. They had the puck in dangerous areas for the entirety of the third period. The amount of near misses, pucks that went just wide of the cage, blocks in front, bountiful. You just knew, Danny, with each of those opportunities that didn't result in the lamp getting lit, it's going to take the one rush the other way. I thought it'd be a really good scoring opportunity. I didn't think it would be one of the worst goals that Logan Thompson allowed all season long. But that's how it turned out in the game where he gave up a couple of soft serve ice cream goals. But they lose 2-1 to the Carolina Hurricanes. Carolina moves on. Tip of the cap to them. They were the better team in the series.
Yeah, they deserve to win it.
And the Capitals get eliminated in five.
But that's the story, and you said it very well. It's the you're never going to control all 60 minutes. These are NHL teams. When it's give everything you have time, the other team gets paid to play two, and they're good. Right? That's first round, second round. That's anywhere. Okay. The inability to convert, the inability to turn any of those times into goals with any consistency is why they're making golf reservations or going to Cabo or wherever it is that they're going to go. And it's a bummer because this is such a likable group. But yeah, I mean, you've seen that story before. And even if they win this game, it's still uphill. It's still, you know, you're asking them to do two more times against the team that they've struggled to win once against over the course of this series. So, you know, there's no guarantee if they win last night that they win the series, but would have loved to have seen it. But yeah, I mean, that's the story, right? I mean, you have, all you have to do is change the date, change some of the numbers and a couple of the names, Mad Lib style, and you can run it back.
As far as Washington last evening, I thought they got much better results in terms of being able to tilt the ice and get some opportunities. They just couldn't get enough shots on goal. But, Danny, it's hard to come away from last night and not think they waited too long to make the Lars Eller change, huh? A lot of us were calling for that. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like fans or media are smarter than the coach of the year, Spencer Carberry. But sometimes coaches are very loyal. Sometimes coaches feel like they don't want to send the wrong message or come off like they're panicking. It was pretty obvious last night. McMichael off the wing at center with Leonard and Mangiapane. That line was really good. The speed they provided was really good. I know they didn't play a ton on the ice. I think McMichael had like 13 minutes. They were the fourth used line, so to speak. But that line was so much better than it was with Lars Eller throughout the playoffs. And I mean on both ends of the ice, getting the puck out of the defensive zone, generating some chances offensively. Makes you wish they would have done that a little bit sooner, I gotta say.
Yeah, it's, you know, listen, you balance that. We don't want to do anything that's out of our character. We're good too. We don't want to panic. We don't want to make an adjustment. I don't know why this series always comes up in my mind. But forever ago, the Mavericks were the number one seed in the West, and the Golden State Warriors, this is pre-Steph Curry, this is the Baron Davis, you know, Dikembe Mutombo group, they were the eighth seed, and they made Dallas play small. And Dallas was like, no, we're not going to play small. We're Dallas. This is what we do. And they lost the series because of it. That was one of those, okay, you were too stubborn on that one. Then there's the first time the other team makes a run or the first time the other team has success against you, we got to change everything. And that looks like you're panicking and you don't really trust your group. So there's a fine line there as a coach, and it's always hard to make that decision. In retrospect, and even in regular time, easier for me to say without consequences here on the radio, I'd have done that much sooner. I'd just no to Lars Eller. Even after the first round, I'd have been like, I'm good. I'm all set on this one. But I understand the pathology. I understand not wanting to look like you're panicking and adjust a bunch of different things. But maybe
and
after
the hockey reasons too.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe after game two or game three, you go, okay, now it's time.
It was too late, man. And they were a better team last night, pretty obviously. I thought the way they lined things up was the best it's been all series. And I thought that resulted in things you're looking for in terms of chances. Still, the lack of shots, a lot of that was Carolina's blocks or pucks that would sail wide of the net. And you got to put some of those on the goalie, put them on the pads, let Anderson have those big rebounds that he was giving you pretty much throughout the night. He was able to pounce on a lot of those. Our Caps Elite Player of the Game, we do it after every single Caps playoff game, so this will be the final time we give you this, sadly, on Grant and Danny this postseason. Presented by Elite Power and Energy Corporation, let Elite Power and Energy install a backup generator for you and fill your propane tank so you don't lose power when the storm hits. 24/7 service, complete and powerful solutions, ElitePowerAndEnergyCorp.com. My Caps Elite Player of the Game from last night, I'll go Jacob Chychrun. I know he was a minus two on the ice for those two goals. I would just point out again that there were two bad goals given up. And I don't know, I'm guessing one of them was the empty netter, frankly. So maybe he was on the ice for one of the goals. I'd have to look. But he had a team-high four shots. He blocked two shots. He had a couple of hits. He was very active, joined the rush. I thought both ends of the ice, there were times where I noticed him and liked things that he was doing. I at times in this series, thought Chychrun, you know, would have these moments he wanted back. It was a tough series overall on the blue line defensively for the Capitals with the forecheck of Carolina. But I like Chicky's game last night, so I will give him my elite player of the game.
Anthony Beauvillier scored the goal, but it, you know, that's what it was going to take in this series and even last night to win that game. It's not these wonderful, beautiful scoring chances, video game style, with the difficulty turned down, were not going to be regularly available to this group. It's got to be that style of goal, and he got one last night.
Stinks that it's over, because this was an incredibly fun season. This was an immensely likable group. There's always multiple factions, I think, of Caps fans, and everyone's invited and welcome. But there are, I think, like the diehard Caps fans who have been watching the team all season, who I'm sure are in love with this group. This is as fun a team to support for this club, just speaking for myself, outside of maybe the Stanley Cup year as I can remember. Because they weren't supposed to be good, let alone really good. And then they were excellent. And a lot of people thought, including myself, Ovechkin probably wasn't going to break the record this year. And then not only did he break it, but he broke it despite missing 5 weeks with a broken leg because he was so damn good. And he had one of his best statistical offensive seasons ever in terms of how frequently he was scoring goals. So for a lot of reasons, this was an immensely memorable year. But I just loved this locker room, this dressing room. You know, coaches always say after the season ends, we remember when Dan Quinn said this, you see this all the time, it's kind of cliched. But at the end of a year when you don't win the championship or when you get eliminated, like, this group's never going to be back together. This is such a tight brotherhood a la the Commanders that that stinks, because I really did like this team. You got to make some changes. There are guys that are some dead weight. Their contracts, you're going to want off the books, what have you. But Spencer Carberry addressed this last night, and I couldn't agree with him more. I will remember this group, and it was a little bit more special because it was the 50th anniversary of Caps hockey for a long, long time.
This 50th anniversary Caps team will go down in history, and I'll just speak for myself, is this is one of the greatest seasons that I've ever been a part of as a coach or a player. And I'll never forget this group. But I told those guys, I love them. And every single one of them, what we went through as a group this year and what they accomplished and O's record and everything that went into this season, I will never forget this group. But really, really memorable year.
Year one for Carberry, they weren't supposed to make the playoffs. They did. They get bounced in round one. Year two for Carberry, they weren't really supposed to make the playoffs. They did. They get to the second round. Maybe that bodes well moving forward into year three with some money to spend, the cap growing, some money coming off the books for some veterans who have been hurt and not available to you, and being able to tweak the roster again. But you got a really good head coach who's about to be named Coach of the Year, and there's a lot of talent on this team. And they've actually gotten younger on the fly here over the last couple of years with the development
amazing.
Of players like Protas and McMichael, you know, Dylan Strome in his 20s. Pierre-Luc Dubois is only 26 years old. I think people think he's older than he is. Like, they're in a pretty good place going into the offseason, and now they got to find a way to break through the second round again. That's going to be the goal, Danny, because, you know, as great as the year was, and I'm perfectly happy to make the case it was a massive success as an overall season, I mean, in the playoffs, you didn't get as far as you wanted to, and you came up small in a series where you and Carolina are pretty comparable. Everyone was picking this thing to go 7-6 games regardless. It only went 5. It probably could have, should have gone six, but it didn't. You know, you lost in five games to a division rival that you had a better regular season against. And just looking at those facts, black and white, it's going to make it a little harder for them to stomach it today.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Thinking about the changes, I wonder how you do this as an evaluator, right? Where you go, this isn't broken, right? We don't need a massive overhaul. We don't need to panic. We don't need to make sweeping changes. And some of it, you're locked in. I mean, you know who your goaltenders are for the next handful of seasons. I wish I had another option last night that would have been viable. Besides Logan Thompson giving up a couple really soft goals, but not that you would have made a switch, but it's just like, damn, that one's frustrating. As the defensemen are struggling, as you said, throughout this series to get the pucks out of the zone, to move the pucks along, you know, Martin Fervori, I think, would have helped a lot, but still, he's only on the ice for a third of the game. You still have to cover the rest with certain guys. So I don't know what kind of fixes and improvements, but this front office is going to do a good job. I know that. They're going to find guys that other teams are saying no thank you to, or we can't fold them into our culture. You can here. Look at Pierre-Luc Dubois. Look at the million guys time in memoriam that they've got. The Brett Connolly corollary is what I call it, where a guy that's undervalued that no one really cares about shows up here, plays his best. That is kind of typical of them. They're going to do that again, and I have no doubt of that.
I say they're in a good spot going into the offseason. They're not losing a whole lot. So Backstrom comes off the books, free agent. He was on long-term IR, so they've already gotten a lot of that money, frankly. Same with TJ Oshie. But there's still a little bit of money that you pay out this year that you won't have to next year, so that gives you a little more cap space. Andrew Mangiapane was a $5-plus million player, almost $6 million. He made $5.8 million this year. He is okay. He is not worth $5.8 million. He was one of the few guys, frankly, they took on this year that maybe didn't deliver on how much they were paying him. So I think you let him walk, and that creates considerable cap space. The other free agent among the veterans is Lars Eller. And this is an area where you can get younger, you can get a little faster if they want to do that at center. He is 36 years old. He was a part of the 2018 Stanley Cup Championship team. He'll be a hero forever because of that. But you thank him for his time, you shake his hand and let him walk. They've got two free agents I think they should try to keep. Anthony Beauvillier, I think, is a no-brainer. And he'll be due for a raise, presumably. He made about $1.2 million. You saw him score huge goals both last night in the Montreal series, going back early on against the Canadiens. He's 27. He's got a lot of speed.
Yeah, his speed's the thing I want.
He's a pain in the ass for an opponent on the forecheck. So, like, I want more of that. So you got, you know, he fit in well with the Canes, basically. You know, he's one of their type of guys. So I think you try to keep him around. And then Taylor Radish, who's a $1 million player. There's a lot of guys like him floating around if you wanted to go in a different direction. But I think he fits the room well. He worked really well with Dowd and Duhaime. He's got some legal stuff he's dealing with right now that I don't know how much they're, you know, involved in and if that's going to be a factor at all in him being here or not. But at 27 years old, unless you want to get a little bit younger with a version of him, I would be perfectly fine bringing him back and keeping him around. So those are your free agents. Their only restricted free agent, to my knowledge, is Alexander Alexiev. And either he leaves or you pay him a small raise from $825,000 and keep him. I'm fine with either of those. But they're able to kind of figure out the way they want to go. How do you want to build this roster? To your point, in terms of what they do next, I think you got to try to find a top six type offensive weapon. You know, when they went and got Dylan Strome's a good example, or the trade they made for Pierre-Luc Dubois is another one, where they don't try to just go sign a guy that's like 33 and for 2 years. What they like to do, Danny, is find a fit who in their mid to late 20s is still in their prime. Bring them in and pay them a good salary. And I hope they do that in the top six. They probably need depth on the blue line as well because, as you said, you're one injury away from being thin. The Ferravari injury killed them. And then I thought Carlson, and he's 35 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, we've grown up with him. He's basically my age. He's been around forever. He slowed down this postseason. I don't know if he was banged up, hurt, or if that's just a long season taking its toll for an older body. But they could probably stand to add one more legitimate defenseman to help them out.
Anybody coming up from Hershey to fill some of these vacancies on the cheap so they can maybe make a more splashy move potentially?
Yeah, they've got good players. I mean, they have a system now, right? But I would say the best talent that they have is a little bit further away, right? So you're talking about a defenseman in Cole Hudson who's going to be here but is not at Hershey and is not going to be here next month, let's say. He's going back playing college hockey. Andrew Kristol puts up huge numbers below the level that Hershey's at in the minor leagues. Probably, you know, will be around in the building, training camp, everything else, but a couple seasons away. But the guys that you already know, you're talking about Hendrix Lapierre.
Yeah, the Lapierres, the Ethan Bears, the Marochnichenkos.
Bear, I don't have a lot of interest in. He was actually dressed and available had they have wanted him to be for the playoffs. But yeah, Ivan Reshnichenko would be a wing. He would be the most skilled kind of goal-scoring wing from Hershey if they wanted to call him up. And then if they wanted to replace Lars Eller with Hendrix LaPierre as like a third-line center, you could just do that internally and it wouldn't cost money. They tried that at the beginning of the year, though, remember?
Yes, I do.
LaPierre was the center. They opted to not do that because he was struggling immensely. He hasn't played at the same level this year at Hershey as he did last year. And then they had to go trade and go get Lars Eller anyway because they felt like they needed more size or snarl or, you know, draws being won and defense being played. So, yeah, there are a couple of guys. I think it's more org depth that's ready right now than it is, like, star power.
Mm-hmm.
And the star power guys in the system, of which there are a few of those guys now, are a little further away, probably, and or just, you know, not going to be here early next season. But they've added some youth. They've added some speed. They're kind of doing it at the same time. So it's been a fascinating reworking. I guess they've never really rebuilt, but reloaded. And it's funny. A lot of people say they got to detonate. They got to blow it up. And that's always the thought right after you lose. But I don't see that very often in sports. When you're the number one team in your conference, when you're the number one team in the sport most of the year and you finish second, you're the number one seed in the playoffs, and then you blow it up. It's complicated with them because Ovi's so old. You know, Carlson,
yep,
their top defenseman, is at 36. You know, you've got a couple of guys with age that deeper into the playoffs sometimes start to slow
down. They wear down, yeah.
And that is a factor. I mean, look, Ovechkin last night I thought was a minus. I mean, he did not help them. If he scores a goal, everything changes. And he did two nights ago or two games ago. But on games where he does, and he had some good shots. But outside of the shots, like keeping pucks in, there was a...
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Point where right before a penalty, he got beat so badly to a puck. You know, in the open ice sprint where it's just like so revealing. And you're like, ah, that's tough to watch.
Yeah, that's cringeworthy. And so for people that focus on the negative, that's all they'll see. They don't see the other value. But, you know, this...
It's a trade-off for almost 50 goals.
And that's kind of the point, is in a series like this, your best weapon is rendered useless. And that's why I thought Carolina was going to win it, quite frankly. They take away the things that make you special, right, if you're the Capitals, right? That's why I thought this was a terrible matchup. Now, your response might be, you're probably going to have a terrible matchup at some point that you need to be able to overcome if you're the one seed, if you're going to live up to expectations. And I get that. I don't know the counter, but I'd rather have Ovi than not. Again, 44 goals that grow on trees.
No.
I don't care what age you are. I don't care if you're 26 or 46.
There's probably a real question asked, though. Like, does he need to be a top liner getting 17, 18 minutes? You know, the power play is always going to be there for him. And they, unlike every other team, just have him out there. They use one unit, essentially. He's out there for 2 minutes. I mean, do you start to maybe spell him a little bit more, thinking about the longevity of the season, the playoffs? I think that's a fair question.
Yeah, he'll be 40, yeah.
Could his line be, you know, deeper down the board where he plays just a heavy physical game and is a power play assassin and occasionally contributes, and then you have a couple of, you know, nicer defensive players with him or something like that, where it's a, you know, a 10, 12-minute a night line. And I don't think that's coming next year, but is that in the offing at some point? Possibly. You saw that he was getting short-shifted and his role diminished as this series went on, and he was struggling. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I also don't think... Like, everyone makes it such a Stephen A. Smith scream fest. Where's Ovechkin? He's 39 years old, man. It's not that crazy that at the end of a season that was as draining as this one is, like, it's part of it. You're 39. He's not a defenseman. You know what I mean? He's a wing and a goal scorer who plays a ton of minutes and is on the ice for long stretches of time with the power play and otherwise. Like, yeah, you're going to wear down a little bit as the year goes on.
The other thing I would add to that, again, almost like preemptively addressing the shouty shows, if and when they do cover this, it's not as if the rest of the Capitals are having this banner series. Do you know what I mean? Like, I understand he's the lead goose. He's the headliner.
Yeah, makes the $9 million, and he wears the C, so he's the record setter. More heat.
Sure. But I guess my point is, it's not as if, like, I don't know. I'm using a basketball analogy. Say Nikola Jokic doesn't have a great series, and Michael Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon carry them for a couple of games, and Denver's on the verge of elimination because Jokic can't get right. If that's happening, hey, let's say, hey, Jokic is choking here. He's not doing well. That's not the case. No, nobody in this series gets to go, I had a great series. Like, some people were okay. Some people had some nice moments, but Carolina shoved it on you. You know what I mean? Like, there's nobody that went, Dylan Strome, I had my 9 points and we couldn't get it done. Nobody did anything. Yeah. Everyone was minus.
Last night, you lost 3-1, but there were 2 goals scored against you, you know, that beat you. Mm-hmm. And they were both bad goals that shouldn't have been given up. Now, you can kill Logan Thompson for those goals, but you also have to acknowledge the season he had, and everybody would. And I just do the same with Ovechkin, and for whatever reason, that bothers people. But, yeah, he didn't play well in this series, and he didn't play well last night. I thought he actually played poorly for much of last night. But doesn't change the bigger picture for me, what he's meant, not just all time to this organization, but even this season. And they don't get where they got. They're not a one seed. They're not winning the East. They're not winning the Metro without him. And the idea of, like, addition by subtraction, people sleep on how important a 50-goal scorer is. It's a pretty big deal. You know, every team would sign up for that.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and, like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because, like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.